Welcome back. I'm Michelangelo Cigarelli on Sirius XML Q 108. Steve Thrasher is a writer for The Village Voice, staff writer, covers a lot of issues, writes about politics, writes about LGBT issues, has been a public radio reporter and producer, regularly contributes to Marketplace, and he writes for the New York Times, among other publications, and wrote a piece for the New York Times about a homeless shelter for LGBT youth run by the Metropolitan Community Church in New York City called Sylvia's Place, where he found some pretty startling things. And it raises questions about whether or not we should be just wanting any place for LGBT youth because they need a place, or demanding that they meet certain requirements. He joins me to talk about it. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Michelangelo. It's a pleasure to be on with you.
Am I wrong to say you were a public radio reporter? You're still a public radio reporter.
I enjoy doing it. I do file things occasionally for Marketplace, and I'm part of a nonprofit media collective that produces projects for public radio. It's very much where my heart is. I just don't have a lot of time to do it all the time these days, but I still love doing it very much.
Well, you know, the piece in the New York Times, I think it really hit us all in a very uncomfortable place, because we want to respect the work of institutions like the Metropolitan Community Church. We want there to be places for LGBT youth, and understand that shelters are really stretched. There are so many kids out there who need places, and there's only so much you can do. And yet, what you found there were conditions that were overcrowded, unsanitary, and I think it raises issues about, and you point to the issues that, you know, it affects self-esteem of young people when they literally feel like they can be treated that way. I'm sorry, go on.
I was going to say, it was a very difficult piece to write, which I worked on over the period of several months. And for many of the reasons you said, it does raise uncomfortable questions. I don't doubt the intentions, to a certain degree, of the people who work at this place and other places that are trying to do the best they can with the resources they have. But for me, almost as much as anything in terms of the LGBT issues and the youth issues, it also, you know, just raises the issues of what the role of government oversight and regulations are, and why those things are important, even for those who are the economically lowest of the low, the most vulnerable.
Talk about the origin of Sylvia's Place and how it got to where it is.
It's from what I could find out, it is run by the charity arm of Metropolitan Community Church. It
was in New York City, up on 40, in the 40s, right, up
36,
in the West.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was started by their charity division, and they basically started with a food pantry and a soup kitchen, and they started providing a place for young people to sleep and to spend the night. To a certain degree, it's a private entity and not entirely beholden to certain regulations, but then they did receive a grant from the New York City Council to become a licensed youth facility. And in, I believe it was 2005 or 2006, three different organizations received that grant: the L.E. Forney Center, Green Chimneys, and Sylvia's Place. And the former two became licensed under the state, but Sylvia's Place did not become licensed, even though the grant sort of created so that they could become licensed. And because of that, it sort of ended up in a gray area where it was not beholden to the regulations of the state, and the conditions that they have there would not have met the regulations of the state. So from what I understand, when the previous organization to be in that space, the L.E. Forney Center, they only had six young people in that space, but up until a couple weeks ago, there were nights where there were up to 30 young people in that space. And it would just create a condition that was very overcrowded, and from many of the youth that I spoke to stayed there, did not feel particularly safe. And the more I've learned about the regulations for youth shelters and why they have a certain ratio of staff to people staying there, I can understand why it seems so chaotic with that many people in that small of a space.
How is it that they're able to still operate without a license, and even after reports like this? You talk about how, in fact, there really was no oversight or investigation by the city until you started doing this story.
Yeah, it was because, to a certain degree, they are a private organization. So if you're not receiving money directly from the state, then the state agency that regulates youth shelters will not be investigating you. But they were in this sort of gray area because they had taken money from the city so that they would become licensed by the state. They just never did. And that's kind of where the gap came to. When I called the state back in the summer, the state agency had never really heard of them. And when I was making follow-up calls in the past few weeks, they did become involved. But a private organization has, certain leeway. However, there were a couple of things that got me interested in the shelter. I've written about homeless youth sort of in the ballroom scene with another article I'd written. And I kind of got interested in Sylvia specifically because I had heard some pieces about it, But then I had spoken to a young person several months ago when I was just talking to him about what it was like to be a homeless youth, and he had told me that he had been staying there, but he would sneak out certain nights to go sleep at the Bellevue shelter, which is an adult homeless shelter, and from other reporting I've done, I know is notoriously one of the roughest. And so something kind of caught my ear, if someone would sneak out of that place to go to Bellevue, what must it be like? I started looking into it more, and another thing that I knew from past work that I've done is that, generally speaking, you can't sleep people in a room without windows, and from what I'd heard, this room did not have windows to the outside air. Churches can sometimes actually, for good or bad, churches sometimes have some leeway with around that they can use their space to fulfill their existing mission. But then when I investigated here, I found that address actually did not have a particular occupancy to be a church by the Department of Buildings in New York. So it definitely is a very difficult thing that, this church obviously wants to do the right thing by offering shelter for homeless youth. And indeed, what I think is the biggest takeaway from my story is that, there are estimated about 4,000 homeless youth on the street every night. A disproportionate number of them are gay or LGBT, because oftentimes when young people will come out to their families, they'll get kicked out of their home. And even from places up in New York, they'll end up on a bus and end up here in our city. And there are about 4,000 of these homeless kids, but New York City right now is financing 251 shelter beds. That's all. There are thousands of young people who have nowhere to go. And to get into one of the shelters, one of the licensed shelters that I profiled briefly in my piece as well and spent time in while I was doing my research, there can be very long waiting lists. So Sylvia's Place is trying to fill a need. But at the same time, the more research I did, the more I realized why it is helpful to have licensed shelters and, what the licensing requirements create for people. Homeless young people have not, as Carl Siciliano told me from the Elie Forney Center, homeless young people have not necessarily started to identify themselves as homeless. And so there is room to work with them before they become the chronically homeless, who are much, much more difficult to work with and help. There's a lot to be done with young people in this age of, 18 to 23, 24, that can be done to help them. And I think a lot of the regulations in action that I've seen in other shelters, when, enacted properly, can really create a good space for young people to stabilize and be able to make some good value out of their lives.
What your piece points out, at least by interviewing one young man, Anthony Alonzi, is that if the conditions are unsafe and unsanitary, they wind up on the streets. He had come out to his family, kicked out of his home. He was 18. Police actually referred him to Sylvia's Place, but he'd heard some bad stories and decided he wasn't going to go there, stayed on the street.
Yeah, that was sort of a common thing that I heard from. I talked to about 20, 25 young people, and that was not an uncommon story, what he described. And it's something that I've heard from people in other cities as well, not just you.
Oh, and that's what I was going to ask you, because obviously we have people listening all across the country. Is this something you hear elsewhere as well?
Yeah, I mean, that's even beyond LGBT and young people, it's a common thing that if homeless shelters are unsafe and people will not want to stay with them. And I see that, you know, when I've interviewed people and I've talked to people on the streets here in New York, you'll find homeless people on the coldest nights who don't feel safe going to shelters. I think one of the reasons why the Runaway Youth Act, which are the guidelines that the federal government puts out for people who are going to be providing shelter for young people who are homeless or have run away, one of the reasons why they have certain parameters, like you can only have 6 people in a room and it needs to be a home-like environment and not a large open bay, which is what you might have with adults, is because it does help young people feel safer, and they are particularly vulnerable. And if the more people you have in one room, you know, the more likely it is that you'll have fights and things like that. So it is really problematic, I think, when young people go to a place and they don't feel safe and they end up on the street, you know, the same things will happen to them that if they're homeless anyway. A lot of the young people that I've talked to, they'll describe very honestly about what being homeless means for them. It means sex work. It means being exposed to situations where they need to find a place to sleep. So, you know, they'll go home with someone just to have a place to sleep. It means, compromising themselves, putting themselves in a lot of dangerous positions. And I don't think where I understand that in some ways having just this concrete floor to sleep on is better than being under a bridge, I think that's sort of creating a false choice. It shouldn't just be that young people either, have to be on the street or have to accept sleeping in a place that's not meeting very minimum government regulations of safety.
And you mentioned Carl Cisliano earlier, executive director of the Ali Forney Center. He was on the program just a few weeks ago, runs a shelter as well, and he says this place is a disaster waiting to happen. It raises issues, of course, regarding the Metropolitan Community Church, at least that runs it as well, because here they are obviously wanting to do good and caring about the community, a gay-founded church. The Reverend Pat Baumgartner runs that church, and somebody very prominent in the community. What does it mean for them, this expose, basically?
I mean, what I hope that it means for them is that whatever good intentions that they may have are going to be supervised by the appropriate government agencies. And I did speak with them briefly when I was working on my piece. And, you know, they indicated to me that they thought everything was fine with their program. They did not want to answer specific charges about many questions I'd heard. But in the time between when I initially interviewed them and, you know, when my piece went to press, when finally the state had gone in there and I talked to young people who'd been there the last night, there were still way too many people sleeping in that room and too many young people sleeping without cots or even pillows who were telling me this. And so that was really sad to hear. And I hope that, you know, if anything, out of this piece, that the city and the state agencies that regulate these things will start to supervise that. But one thing that Carl gave a lot of time talking to me about, and I was sorry that not much of this got to be able to be in the final piece, is that in a way, even though it is important to make sure that these shelters are following guidelines, it's just the beginning of the problem for this population. The real outrage is that there are so many young people without, you know, who are being kicked out of their homes and who also don't have a licensed shelter bed to go to. And that is, I think, you know, sort of the biggest thing that needs to be looked at. And the gay organizations in general, you know, other than a handful of people, the major gay organizations have not been dealing with homelessness very much. A lot of the movement is very adult-oriented, even though here in New York State we've had significant progress this year with marriage nationally, with the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Homelessness hasn't largely been on the radar. And I thought it was really interesting that Carl and several of the other organizations had this campaign for youth shelter, which happened, I think, last week or the week before. And at that event, a speaker came from ESPA, the Empire State Pride Agenda, and sort of voiced their support. But they had nothing to say about the fact that they were going to be honoring Governor Cuomo in just a few days. And Governor Cuomo, of course, is being feted for his support of marriage equality. But he's also sent a budget out that cut youth homelessness by 50%. And here in our city as well, our Mayor Bloomberg was flown down to, or maybe took his own private jet, went down to Washington, D.C. Last month or the month before to get the big award from HRC. And Mayor Bloomberg has tried to cut youth homelessness funding by 50% every year for the past 3 or 4 years. Each year, this year, the city council was able to restore some of it through discretionary funding, but the funding peaked in 2008 and has been falling ever since. And especially considering that homelessness in general has risen so much under the mayor's administration, his tenure, I think it's just really appalling that, he can say we have to tighten our belts and do it at the expense of, homeless kids, homeless young people have been kicked out of their homes.
Well, I have to tell you, it's a great piece that is very important, even though it makes people uncomfortable. And you do great work at the Village Voice. I'm glad we were able to have you on the show, and I hope you'll come back and speak to us again.
Thank you very much, Michelangelo. I really appreciate it.
Steve Thrasher, Village Voice staff writer. His article is in the New York Times. You can go to his website, stephenthrasher.com, and read more about it. We'll continue in a couple of minutes.
The Michelangelo Signorelli Show on Sirius XM OutQ 108.